This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is now accused of asking a staffer to delete camera footage in the Florida classified documents case. We get more from the AP's Lisa Dwyer.
In an updated grand jury indictment just unsealed, former President Donald Trump is now facing new accusations that he and aides asked a staffer to delete camera footage at his Florida estate in an effort to obstruct the classified documents investigation. The indictment quotes a Mar-a-Lago property manager, Carlos de Oliveira, telling a colleague that the boss wanted a server hosting the footage to be deleted. It says de Oliveira went to the IT office last June, took an employee to a small room known as the audio closet, and asked the person how many days the server retained footage. De Oliveira was added to the indictment, charged with obstruction and false statements related to an interview that he gave the FBI earlier this year. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Wildfires reached the outskirts of Athens on Thursday. A strong gust of wind caused flare-ups around Greece, disrupting highway traffic and rail services. The fire raged across parts of the country during three successive Mediterranean heat waves over 2 weeks, leaving five people dead, including two firefighters. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says symptoms of extreme heat on humanity are already unbearable.
The consequences are clear and they are tragic. Children swept away by monsoon rains, families running from the flames, workers collapsing in scorching heat.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. For more news, please join us, voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. With the heat wave spreading across the United States, President Joe Biden unveils some new steps to protect outdoor workers. We get more on that story from the AP's Shelley Adler.
Record temperatures, and I mean record, are now affecting more than 100 million Americans.
Which is why President Biden directed the Department of Labor to increase inspections of potentially dangerous workplaces like farms and construction sites. He also wants heightened enforcement of heat safety violations.
I've asked Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu to issue a heat hazard alert. It clarifies that workers have a federal heat-related protections.
The president also encouraged people to check on neighbors and loved ones during the heat wave and head to cooling centers.
I want the American people to know help is here, and we're going to make it available to anyone who needs it.
I'm Shelley Adler.
The Sudanese army delegations to talks in the Saudi Red Sea port of Jeddah aimed at restoring peace to Sudan has returned home for consultations and will continue after obstacles are overcome, according to an army statement released on Thursday. The latest round of Jeddah talks aimed to bring a pause, if not complete end, to fighting that broke out in April as the army and paramilitary rapid support forces vied for power. More than 3.5 million people have been uprooted because of that fighting. Niger's army command on Thursday declared its support for a coup carried out the previous day by soldiers of the Presidential Guard, saying its priority was to avoid destabilizing the country. Hundreds of supporters of the coup gathered in front of the National Assembly in the capital, Niamey, playing a pro-army music under an overcast sky left by heavy showers on the day. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has appealed for the release of Niger's president, Mohamed Bazoum, and said was concerned about the region as a whole.
So we are witnessing that the whole belt south of the Sahara is becoming an extremely problematic area with terrible consequences for their populations and with terrible consequences for peace and stability in the African continent and further afield.
Rescue operations resumed Friday in the Philippines, a day after a small boat capsized in the lake near the Philippines' capital on Thursday, killing 23 people on board, leaving six others missing. A Coast Guard spokesperson said 40 people were rescued on Thursday. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, July 28th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. ECOWAS condemns the coup in Niger.
ECOWAS is determined not to make this coup succeed. We insist at ECOWAS that Bazoum remains the legitimate and legal president and he must be reinstated as soon as possible.
An analyst says the international community will not let Niger go down. Economist says Zimbabwe's government may be trying to manipulate the currency as an election gimmick. Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye admits he failed to appear in court to answer charges of inciting violence. Voters in the Central African Republic go to the polls on Sunday in a constitutional referendum.
The opposition is saying that, you know, we shouldn't even try to vote because if we try to vote, they will use that act of voting as a legalization of their forfeit because their document is illegal to start with.
And Liberians decry hardship as the country celebrated 176 years of independence. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has condemned the military coup in Niger and is calling for the immediate release of President Mohamed Bazoum. Officers of the Presidential Guard, led by Colonel Major Amadou Abdramani, announced on Wednesday that they had seized power and are holding the president hostage. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has also condemned what he calls an assault against the democratically elected government of Niger. Abdel Fattahou Moussa is the ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security. He tells me ECOWAS insists that President Bazoum remains the legitimate and legal president of Niger and must be reinstated as soon as possible.
This, once again, is another giant step backwards on the path to democratic consolidation in the region. You know, now we have all three Central Sahelian countries, which are under terrorist attack, all also having overthrown their democratically elected leaders in the country, and ECOWAS is determined not to make this coup succeed. We insist at ECOWAS that Bazoum remains the legitimate and legal president and he must be reinstated as soon as possible. And the heads of state of the region will hold an extraordinary summit, an emergency summit on the situation over the weekend to determine what measures to take to ensure the reinstatement of the democratically elected president.
You said that ECOWAS insists that President Bazoum is the president of Niger. There's a military situation there. How do you carry out your insistence?
Yes, we've got tools that, you know, can be used. This is a new administration at ECOWAS. We've already had about three coups in the past 3 years or so in the country, and we don't want a fourth one. We are going to use all the tools at our disposal to make sure that this happens. And I tell you, nothing is off the table. So we are going to go incrementally. I don't think it is wise for me to tell you exactly what we are going to do, but we will do everything we can to make sure that the military return to barracks.
As you mentioned, we have Guinea, we have Mali, Burkina Faso. Now we are talking about a military situation in Niger. What does this seem to be, as you mentioned, the Sahelian countries or the French-speaking countries that this is happening to?
Yes, it's a combination of many factors. The Sahel region itself is confronted with so many elements of fragility. That is where we have the concentration of the terrorist attacks, added to the impact of climate on livelihoods. That has also raised a lot of tension among communities in that region. Number three, you have terrorism, which is there, and then, of course, bad governance. So if you look at the breakdown of the social contract between the people and their government, that is number one. And then with added pressures that are brought to bear by terrorism, which have become a threat multiplier, a stream extreme threat multiplier in the region, you then see that all the ingredients are there for instability. But that does not give the military the license to overthrow democratically elected government.
Abdel Fattah Moussa is the ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs and Security. Analysts say the apparent coup attempt in Niger was not totally surprising, given the West African nation's history of political upheaval. There have been four successful coups and numerous attempted coups since Niger won independence from France in 1960. But analysts say because President Mohamed Bazoum comes from a minority group within Niger and was elected on a platform of pursuing many reforms, he may have encountered resistance from the more dominant ethnic groups. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo joins us with this report.
In their address to the nation, the head of the mutiny, Colonel Amadou Abdrahman, said that defense and security forces toppled the government due to bad governance and to the security situation in Niger. On Thursday, all activities by political parties in the country had been suspended until further notice, Abdrahman said on state television. Abdurrahman Al-Kassoum, a political and security analyst who focuses on the Sahel, told VOA from Niger things still seem confusing in the capital, Niamey, a day after the military takeover was announced.
The downtown is being evacuated at the moment for fears of I don't know what. We are in a confusing situation where on one hand there are indications the coup was successful, while on the other hand, others said it hasn't.
Democratically elected President Mohamed Bazoum took the oath of office in April 2021. Dr. Edgar Githua, an international relations and diplomacy expert teaching at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, told VOA the latest political unrest was not unexpected.
This is a country that has endured four coups in its history. So the political culture in Niger is that I think the military feeling very entitled or have been enabled to feel like they really need to play a role in politics.
Githua says President Bazoum's ethnic background could be another possible reason.
He's a Diffa Arab and he came from a minority group. He came in and was making lots of changes because he inherited a country that had the bigger ethnic groups within Niger. We're talking about the Hausa, the Zamas, the Tuaregs. And normally what happens for such presidents who inherit constituencies where they come from a minority, they feel, for lack of a better word, they feel like they're under siege because you're inheriting a system where you are in the minority and the other people who control government are from other ethnic groups who believe or do not feel you deserve to lead them.
The West African Economic Bloc, ECOWAS, the African Union, and others in the international community have condemned the events in Niger and have called on the president to be freed immediately. In a region that has recently seen a wave of coups in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea, Niger has been able to hold on to democratic stability since Bazoum came to power. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Voters in the Central African Republic go to the polls on Sunday in a constitutional referendum that, if passed, would remove the two-term presidential limit and allow President Faustin Archange Touadéra to stay in power longer. The Russian paramilitary group Wagner is operating in the country. Alain Kuda is a physician and scientist originally from Central African Republic. He tells me that he agrees with the opposition call to boycott the vote because it is illegal.
First of all, that project is illegal because they submitted that project before to the Constitutional Court of Central African Republic, and that court, you know, stated that project was illegal. Why? Because current constitution document, it's clearly written that any modification can only move forward if two chambers, like we have two chambers, legislative bodies in Central African Republic, the Senate and the House of Representatives. So only when those two bodies will be set and, you know, decide to move forward, we will be able to change our constitution. So because that decision, they were not happy about that decision, and the government there, they decided to remove the president of that constitutional court, and they put, you know, someone, you know, who will do their business. Secondly, the current constitution was written by every Central African. Pretty much everybody was taking part of writing that constitution. the recent document that they put forward, it was a document written by maybe 5 or 6 person. And most of all, it was written by the government in power.
So you say that from your viewpoint, the referendum is illegal. How do you think the vote on Sunday is going to go? What is the opposition saying there?
Okay, the opposition is saying that, you know, we shouldn't even try to vote because if we try to vote, they will use that act of voting as a legalization of their forfeits because their document is illegal to start with. And we all know the result of the election on Sunday. We know already that they're going to put, you know, a yes, even if some people vote and they have a majority of no. They are not ready to accept the verdict of the vote. So I don't think that it would be a good idea to ask people to go vote because they will use that vote again to maybe show to the international opinion that, you know, somehow, you know, people voted that constitution and they succeeded.
Also, there are reports that there are Wagner people in Central African Republic.
Yes, absolutely. They are there. And we have, you know, those WhatsApp groups where, you know, people from every part of Central African Republic, they are reporting all those violations. And from what we know, those Wagner, they have been given, you know, some territory for them to exploit, you know, gold, diamonds, whatever you want. And we also know that, you know, they don't pay one dime to the Central African Republic finances because they are there to protect the government.
Alain Kuda is a physician and scientist originally from Central African Republic. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 28. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Once again, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. Once again, the WhatsApp number is +1 202 258 3076. And we thank you for 60 years of support. Economists in Zimbabwe say the government is artificially manipulating the country's sinking currency in a bid to secure victory in next month's general elections. Inflation and the weakness of the Zimbabwe dollar have become an issue in the election, with the main opposition party saying it will abandon the currency if voted into office. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Over the past few weeks, Zimbabwe's dollar has gotten stronger against the US dollar, a rare occurrence in recent years. Still, prices for groceries and other basic goods keep going up. 32-year-old Big Boy Kushupika wants that to change. He says, "My wish is for prices and rate to move together, not having prices in US dollars going up when its rate against the Zimbabwean dollar is going down. Prices keep increasing in US dollar. That's where the challenge is. I do not know how they have to solve this." Zimbabweans have used foreign currencies like the US dollar and the South African rand since the collapse of the original Zimbabwean dollar amid severe hyperinflation in 2008. The government issued a new Zimbabwean dollar a few years ago, but it has struggled to maintain value. Economists say that in recent weeks, the government has suspended payments for major projects like road construction with the goal of reining in spending, bolstering the currency, and easing inflation. Gift Mugano, an economics professor at Durban University of Technology, says this is being done because of Zimbabwe's August 23 general election.
They want to create a false impression that the government is winning the war on exchange rate. But in all economic reasoning, we cannot concentrate on exchange rate as an effective policy instrument to direct the economy to stability.
But Persistent Gwanyanya, an economist who sits on the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe's monetary committee, rejects claims of currency manipulation. He says the government's currency measures are working and prices will go down.
But we understand the adjustment may not happen in one day. It may take time. As businesses and individuals have taken position, and unwinding would mean that they would incur some losses. So this period is expected that prices may have to adjust with a time lag. The policy would have what we call impact lag. But I'm pretty confident that post-election, the situation will remain as it is.
Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Chisa Besigye has admitted that he and another defendant failed to appear in court to answer charges of inciting violence. Dr. Besigye, who is a four-time presidential candidate and currently leader of the People's Front for Transition, was arrested last year while trying to mobilize ordinary Ugandans to join him in protesting the high cost of living. A magistrate judge issued an arrest warrant after the prosecution accused Dr. Besigye of habitually evading court proceedings. Dr. Besigye tells me there is no need to subject himself to what he says is a politically motivated charge.
I was supposed to appear in one of the cases for which I was charged last year, and I did not appear this morning. So the magistrate issued an arrest warrant for my non-appearance in that case. My lawyer was in court, but his explanation was not accepted, and so an arrest warrant was issued.
What do you say? The judge said that you have a habit of not turning up when you are cited.
Yes, I think he said so, which obviously is not true at all. I have been charged uncountable times on all manner of offenses, including several capital offenses that attract death sentence, for which I have secured bail and fulfilled my conditions of bail. I have never absconded, even in the greatest, where the case was a very grave one. This is a fairly minor offense of inciting, the charges that of inciting violence. It's obviously simply a political case, saying that I spoke some words that incited the public. So there is absolutely no cause for me not to subject myself to a trial if there is any. In fact, in just, I think, about 2 months back, another similar case was dismissed by the court for the failure of prosecution to prosecute me after a long time. And very many other cases have been dismissed for want of prosecution. So it's the prosecution which is in the habit of not coming to court, and not myself.
Dr. Besigye, thank you. Always, it's nice to talk with you.
Great pleasure, James. Have a good day.
Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Chisa Besigye was speaking with us from Kampala, Uganda. Liberia celebrated this week its 176th Independence Day, 3 months before October presidential and legislative elections. As Denise Nepson reports from Monrovia, Liberian President George Weah's government has come under criticism for not doing enough to ease economic hardship in the country.
On Wednesday, July 26, President George Weah took center stage along with his foreign counterparts, the presidents of Ghana, and the Gambia as they walked through the hall with a rousing welcome to commemorate the holiday. From the singing of the national anthem to the traditional performances, the occasion was colorful with the attendance of dignitaries. This year's Independence Day is the last for WIA's administration and the last until general elections in October. President WIA restated the importance of peace and vowed to uphold and ensure free, fair, and transparent elections.
Today, we reiterate with renewed resolve my commitment to discharge the responsibilities imposed on me as a leader in the promotion and preservation of the fundamental rights and freedoms that are guaranteed by the Constitution. Transparent, inclusive process. I promise that the conduct of the October 10th general election will be credible and will meet all national and international standards.
We are also stressed the need for Liberians to recognize the value of their country in Africa and strive collectively to achieve more. But one of President WIA's rivals in the impending elections, the presidential aspirant for the collaborating political parties, Alexander Cummings, said at 176 years of age, the country is still backward, and his 6 years in office have made things worse.
Our country is too old and experienced to be where we are today.
For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsey in Monrovia, Liberia.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup as Nigeria shocked co-host Australia 3-2 in Brisbane to take a significant step towards qualifying for the knockout phase of the tournament. Uche Nakanu, Osinachi Ohale and substitute Asisat Oshola all scored after the home team had gone ahead just before the break to hand Africa their first win of the tournament down under and put Nigeria 1 point away from the last 16. Nigeria went top of Group B with 4 points ahead of Canada on goal difference, with Australia on 3 and Ireland out of contention without any points at the bottom of the standings. Randy Waldrum is the head coach of the Super Falcons.
I told them after the match, nobody believed in us except us. And when we had that belief together, we can accomplish great things. And they did that tonight. So very proud of them. Extremely proud of the effort. Well, a lot of it just came at the end, just came on pure heart and desire to compete and fight, because they were throwing everything at us at the end, and the players just repelled everything. And I think it's just a credit to them to put that kind of effort in to get this result.
Goal scorers Asisat Oshola and Osinachi Ohale speaks of the Super Falcons' victory against the co-hosts.
I'm a team player. I don't care the minute I play. I'm just always ready to go out and give my 100% effort and also to help the team get the 3 points or whatever point we need. There was no point going 90 minutes if I can't give 100% effort. So if I have to play 20, 15, 10, 5 minutes, 2 minutes, it doesn't matter how many minutes I have to play. But whatever minutes I'm going to play, if I can give 100% effort, then I'm going to do it.
Like, I feel so great. I feel great. I feel happy. I'm happy for myself. I'm happy for my team and how far and what we've achieved so far. But I'm happy I got the goal for my team. I'm happy I continued. I finished the game. So I'm cool.
Staying with women's football, the 2023 CAF Women's Champions League, now in its third year in a row, will be played in Cote d'Ivoire between the 5th to the 19th of November 2023. The CAF Women's Champions League 2023 promises to be a perfect platform for Cote d'Ivoire, not only to showcase its state of readiness in infrastructure, but in mobilizing the country ahead of the men's finals. In transfer news, AC Milan have signed Nigerian forward Samuel Chukwueze from La Liga side Villarreal on a 5-year deal. The Serie A club announced on Thursday that the 24-year-old has joined the Rossoneri for a contract worth about $22 million plus $10 million in add-ons. In basketball news, the biannual FIBA Women's Afro Baskets gets underway on Friday in Kigali. A total of 12 countries will be participating and have been drawn into 4 groups of 3 teams each. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, July 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend.